What's up, Buck?
Hey, Bill, how are you, man?
When you were at UCLA, did you ever have to be a player representative at one of the Media Day events?
You know, we never really had Media Day events like this, but I think we had media always in our room and in our locker room and around us, because being in L.A., even though you had some, you had the L.A. Raiders, SC and UCLA at the time were pretty doggone popular. I mean, you know, we were guys. You had Rodney Peete over there and Troy Aikman for us, battling for Heismans, and a lot of guys off those teams. I think about 30 plus guys on our side and probably 30 plus guys on their side going to the league over my 4 years. So we were pretty, we were in the paper, a lot of news folks, both local and national. So we didn't have Media Day like they have now, and I'm kind of glad we didn't. But
right,
well, they got enough of us on campus. Believe me, that's one of the reasons why I got into this business. Talking to guys like Jim Hill and Washington. I mean, it was a lot of former players or guys that have been around the game that would just come talk, and you would have a chance to just hey, rap to them. How did you get in this industry? What was it that made you decide to do this? And it was interesting to talk to him and get a chance to get a feel for that. And then Dick Vermeil was a former UCLA guy who called games. I mean, I got my first broadcast board from Dick Vermeil's old board. So, we had that part for me was interesting because I got a chance to be in a big media town and start working for Prime Ticket as an intern back in college. So I didn't really need to go to a media day.
Wow, that's pretty cool. So it was Troy Aikman and Rodney Peete, and I followed both their careers, but I just didn't connect. That was in Los Angeles at the same time, you're saying?
That's at the exact same time. Remember, they were battling for the Heisman
right. For
years and back-to-back. My sophomore and junior year were the 2 years where it was, they were the two guys on the West Coast. They were the ones that everybody was talking about. And I think it was interesting that we all kind of got the draft off of that. And most of the guys that played around that era, we were really good players. But think about the stuff that happens. When we go to the Cotton Bowl, Troy Aikman is being talked about every day. The Dallas Cowboys are there. You know he's going to get drafted number one, and the Cowboys had the number one pick. And Rodney Peete didn't get drafted as high but had a long NFL career, I think 16 years. So, yeah, those two guys played at the same time, and it was – it was neat for college football, but also kind of neat for all of us to be a part of that.
Charles Arbuckle with us. In the 80s, when you play for UCLA or USC, and maybe you're a big name like Rodney Peete or Troy Aikman, or maybe not such a big name, but you're walking around L.A. or, Buck, you guys head to the beach, not far from the beach at all. Are the ball players looked at like Hollywood stars?
We had a pretty good – I would say, because we were both pretty good teams at the time.
Right.
And, there was some star power on both sides. I mean, Junior Seau was a young pup on that team over there for them. And, we had guys like Ken Norton and Carnell Lake. So, yeah, I mean, we would go places, and you got some good treatment. Got a chance to go to Arsenio Hall show a few times. Went to the L.A. Lakers game, got to sit on the floor. So, yeah, we got pretty good treatment.
I bet.
It was neat from the standpoint of being at a big city and two big programs right across the street from each other, and especially – a lot of those perks started coming along after you would kind of graduate and be recruited by agents and there was a lot of agents in that town. So it was good. Life wasn't bad in L.A.
I bet you it was better back then than it is today, just because, L.A.'s always been L.A., but
yeah,
it just seems like it's busier. It seems like there's so much for people to want to do today, and the programs have been down too, so it's faded a little bit.
Yeah, I would agree with you there. I mean, you think about it, there are a lot of entertainment options in L.A., but I think the best thing about that rivalry was it would get people out.
Right.
When you looked on the sideline on both sides, you saw megastars on each side, and I don't know if you see that anymore. I know when USC was really rolling, they had a lot of folks going to their, coming to their games, being a part of it. But during that time, I mean, it was in November, late November in the season, you knew that that game was going to have a lot of people there. A lot of eyeballs were going to be on it, whether it was at the Coliseum or the Rose Bowl. And I think it kind of spilled over in the town as you would go places, as you would go to different events, as you would go to things. People got to know who you were, and you were on the news a lot. I mean, they knew, you know, they could see you without your helmet on because you were being interviewed, you were being talked to. I was telling my daughter that the other day. I said, imagine you see a bus pass by you in Westwood, and you're on the side of that bus. And she said, Dad, that was you. I said, yeah. That was, you know, I was on the side of a bus, and, you know, it was me and about three or four other players. But she said, you were pretty good. And I said, yeah, I wasn't bad. So those are the kind of things that when you're in a town like that and it's about, you know, the L.A. and, you know, movie stars, and to be a little bit a part of that, that was kind of neat. That part was neat.
Charles Arbuckle with us. Danny in New York City, who's a cop, he has the night shift, and then he listens to the show right after that. Danny in New York City points this out. How about this stat, Buck? There were three teams that never scheduled below the FBS. Three teams left. It was USC, UCLA, and Notre Dame. That has ended. USC has scheduled UC Davis for 2021.
I'm going to blame my buddy Hawk for talking USC in the plan. Dan Hawkins is the head coach there.
Right,
now.
Right.
I am sure Hawkins has done a really nice job recruiting there, by the way. And he was a former colleague of mine at ESPNU. We keep in touch. Yeah, I saw that news, and I said, well, USC finally had to acquiesce because now it's only UCLA and Notre Dame that hasn't played an FCS school. And it's kind of been that way. I think if you think about when we were playing or even now, UCLA schedule has always been pretty good. I can remember when we'd play the guys from Miami, you'd play Oklahoma. When I was there, we played Tennessee, we played Michigan. Never scheduled lightly. Now, you would have a Long Beach State, which was still a Division I school, which doesn't play football anymore, a Fresno State. And everybody talked about Fresno State. They were tough back then. So when you play Jim Sweeney's guys back in the day, you were in for a dogfight. I remember we beat them 17-0, and we had like five or six guys that had to get treatment afterwards. I had an AC sprain that still bothers me to this day playing those jokers from Fresno State. So, yeah, I mean, you know, some schools take some time off and they don't get to play. They don't play the toughest ones. And I can see Hawkins talking his way into USC and probably tried to get to Notre Dame and UCLA, but he went to USC, the next best option.
Did you get to watch any of the SEC or Big 12 yesterday?
I watched a little bit of the Big 12 with Les Miles and Gundy both on because I was just interested to see how Les would answer some of the questions that were coming up to him. I didn't watch much of it. I'm going to the ACC Media Day, I think Wednesday, for a few hours. So I'll be hanging out over there kind of listening to the talking season, like they say.
There was one moment. I was watching the Big 12, Les Miles, and in this case, it wasn't him at the podium. It was a one-on-one with some dude I don't know. And basically, this guy says, now, again, I'm paraphrasing. He did not use these words, but he basically said, Les, your quarterbacking at LSU was crap. What are you going to do about it at Kansas? I don't know if you're watching, but Les took it, man. He was good.
You know, I think because he was able to, in that situation with Puka Williams and the suspension there, I think that probably made it easier for him to handle that question. But the guy was right. His quarterbacks were not very good at LSU, and I'm interested to see if he's going to be different there. I think from that standpoint, Bill, what I'm going to give Les a pass on right at the very beginning until I see for sure, I think from a quarterback standpoint, and an offensive standpoint, he's hired, you know, he's got the right idea on offense, what he wants to do. Now, is he going to let that person execute? That's my only thought with Les Miles. Les Koning is his offensive coordinator. Right. He's been able to do some things. I'm curious to see if he's going to really allow him to run the ship because that's been his problem. In the past, he wants to line up and go old school Michigan, and even Michigan now is starting to go into no huddle. So if Les doesn't change, we're going to see the same thing we saw with him, and they're not as talented as at Kansas, and he has to understand that and know that.
Buck, we'll see you next week.
All right, man. Always good talking to you.